The debate over raising the minimum wage. Raising the minimum wage. President Obama is talking about it. So is the mayor of Portland. Currently, the national minimum wage is $7.25 an hour. Maine's minimum wage is 25 cents higher. Several U.S. cities have raised their minimum wage, but only one East Coast city, Washington, D.C. The president, through executive order earlier this year, raised the hourly minimum wage for federal contract workers to $10.10 an hour. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we'll hear from both sides on this issue. Does raising the minimum wage help move people out of poverty? Or does it hurt small business and increase unemployment? And what, if anything, is different about the debate today than in years past? Maine Calling looks at payday for millions of Americans, but first, this news. From the MPBN studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. It's a debate that's been going on for years now. On the one side, there's the argument that raising the minimum wage will help lift people out of poverty and on the path to a better life. On the other side, the argument that if businesses have to pay more, they will hire fewer people. And there are other dimensions of this debate as well. Today, we will hear from several different perspectives. With me in the studio, Steve Robinson with the Maine Heritage Policy Center, Garrett Martin with the Maine Center for Economic Progress. Also with us today, Peter Gore. He's with the Maine Chamber of Commerce and Portland Mayor Mike Brennan. Of course, we want to hear your thoughts on the minimum wage. Should it be raised, or will that hurt small business and the overall economy? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. And welcome all of you to Maine Calling.
Good afternoon.
Mayor Brennan, I'm going to start with you. In your State of the City address, you called for a higher minimum wage in Portland. What do you believe that would do for the city?
I think it'd be great for the city. I think it would attract more workers. It would show the fact that we want to have people working in the city that we're paying a fair wage to. We've seen a lot of development in the city in the last several years. And in order to make sure that nobody falls behind in the city, I think it's important for us to consider increasing the minimum wage. We have an unemployment rate in the city right now that's just under 5%. And I think we would end up attracting more people that would want to come to live in Portland. And I think it would be a good calling card for the city.
How many people in Portland currently make minimum wage? Are there very many anyway?
I don't know exactly the number offhand, but there certainly are some people that are making the minimum wage or maybe slightly above the minimum wage. I mean, obviously, we have a lot of service center jobs, retail jobs in the hospitality industry, restaurant, tourism, that are not necessarily paying a competitive wage at this particular point.
Okay, Peter Gore, has the Maine Chamber of Commerce taken a position on the minimum wage debate?
In this state, last session, there was a bill proposed, LD 611, that would have increased Maine's minimum wage. Not quite as – I think up to $8.50 an hour. We did oppose that bill. Maine has a history of being fairly progressive in terms of raising the minimum wage. I pulled out my testimony, and I see here that I wrote that Maine's minimum wage is currently above the federal level. It's $7.50 an hour. That's not as much – as high as some New England states. But it's in the minority in terms of states that have a minimum wage above the above the federal level. That being said, Maine has increased its minimum wage 9 times since 1996, 8 of which have occurred in the last 13 years. So we have a pretty progressive history of this already. Most of those increases have been unilateral increases. In other words, Maine acting alone. We've opposed those increases for the most part, not all the time, but most of the time. Because the state of Maine is acting alone, it puts us at a competitive disadvantage. It raises our cost of doing business. That it makes it higher than other states, and that hurts us in trying to attract jobs and opportunities for our citizens.
When this was before the legislature last year, how would you characterize the reaction from the people, the businesses, and I know businesses of all sizes that you represent? Was there an uproar, or was it just sort of like, you know, this isn't a good idea right now?
It was sort of I guess, more akin to a facepalm in the sense that given the condition of the economy in this state and nationally, the question from businesses is, okay, where do you expect us to get this money from? It's not like we're making money hand over fist. It's not like our costs of doing businesses are going down in other areas. And at the end of the day, we have to find this money in order to pay these higher wages, and we don't have it.
All right. Well, Garrett Martin and Steve Robinson, you're the economists here. I'm going to have you each lay out your arguments for and against raising the minimum wage. Garrett, I'll start with you. Why do you believe it's important to see a higher minimum wage? And what do you believe is a good number? We haven't started talking numbers yet.
Well, you turn to the right people to talk about numbers, Jennifer. I think the fundamental issue here that most people can relate to is that when we think about what are the hallmarks of an economy that works, I think most people will agree that if you work hard and play by the rules, you should be able to earn enough to make ends meet at a minimum. And better still, if you can actually earn enough to provide a better opportunities for your own kids and for your future. The reality is that the minimum wage is a labor standard. And we've said that if you work, you should be paid at a certain level. Now, the fact remains that in this country, the minimum wage has not kept pace with inflation. In the last 40 years, the value of the minimum wage has dropped dramatically. And if we were returned to the levels where it had been previously, we'd be at about $10.60. But the fundamental issue and the reason why we think this is an important issue to concern ourselves with is that increasingly we see that the results of this economy are not good for working people.
Do you advocate that Maine should go ahead with a higher minimum wage on its own or even Portland on its own? Or are you hoping that there will be a federal law?
I think the best solution certainly would be a federal solution. That said, I think there's plenty of precedent for communities, counties, towns, states to go it alone on this issue. I think in places of this country where people have appropriately discerned that people are working and not making enough to make ends meet, and that this is one approach to help improve that situation, that it's certainly appropriate to consider those alternatives. I'll say, in Maine's case, since we introduced the minimum wage in 1958, we've raised it on average 3 out of every 5 years. So, you know, the reality is that we have a history of acknowledging that wage levels at the lower end of the income ladder have not kept pace and that we need to enact policies to ensure that they do.
Okay, and Steve Robinson, it's your turn. I assume that you do not think the minimum wage should be raised, and I'm wondering even if the Maine Heritage Policy Center believes that there should be a minimum wage at all.
No, we don't think that the minimum wage should be increased at the state level or the federal level, or that the government should be in the business of setting prices for commodities, in which case labor is a commodity. I mean, even Karl Marx would agree with that. I think that the obvious thing here is that this is a political decision. You know, it's no surprise that going into midterm elections, we're seeing a big push from Democratic politicians to raise the minimum wage. There's no increase of the minimum wage that would prevent Democratic lawmakers and politicians and pundits from coming back next year and asking for yet another increase of the minimum wage. And to be honest, the real minimum wage is zero. You know, raising the minimum wage is an ineffective tool for fighting poverty because not every poor person is even making a minimum wage job. And when you raise the minimum wage, you're creating barriers to entry into employment for the people who don't have a job.
What do you mean by that? Not every poor person is making a minimum wage job.
I mean that the majority of poor people aren't working at all. So raising the minimum wage does very little to improve their well-being. What it does actually is it makes it more expensive for them to get a job. One way of looking at a minimum wage is that it's the minimum amount an employer can pay a laborer. Another way of looking at it is you're making it illegal for a laborer to work for something below a set point. I think it particularly affects young people. As the youngest person here on this panel, I can remember a time when I was willing to work for below the state minimum wage or even the proposed federal minimum wage of $10.10 an hour. I think you're creating barriers to entry for young people, for poor people, and these are the kind of people we're trying to help with a policy like increasing the minimum wage. So I think it's just an ineffective tool for fighting poverty.
Okay. If you'd like to join the conversation, the phone number 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. We have calls coming in early, so we're going to go to them early. Going to Mike in Brooklyn, Maine. Hi, Mike.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Yes, my question has to do with, I guess, what would be a disparity in training versus value. If someone has gone to school or with a classic education or a trade school or done something to improve their skill level and their abilities, what's that say for their effort if somebody who hasn't done that can come along and make a wage that's very similar? You know, how does that bode for people in the future seeking an education if they know that they can just show up to a job and get paid better?
I think what Mike is getting at is that the free market is uniquely designed to compensate people requisite with their skills and training. Setting a minimum wage is a kind of government interference that divorces an individual's training from their ability to get compensation with that training. I think it's a very valid point.
I think, Jennifer, that Mike's concern is certainly one that we've heard before and is justified. You know, the reality is, let's think about how this bears out in practice. The minimum wage is just that. It's a minimum. And if we go to sort of your free market principle, if you will, the way employers will respond in kind is they will say, okay, I do want that guy with more skills. I do want that person with more experience and credentials. And so I'm going to bump up my wage levels to be a little bit more than what the minimum is so that I can secure those more productive workers and not lose them to job turnover. And that's one of the key benefits of the minimum wage. Not only does it raise the wage levels for the people who are working at or below the new minimum, but it also raises the wage levels for folks who are working slightly above the minimum. And at the end of the day, everybody benefits because, again, they're earning enough money that they can provide for their families, which at this state in the game right now, individuals working at the minimum wage are not.
As I mentioned at the beginning of the show, there are several cities who have already increased their minimum wage significantly, including San Francisco, Washington, D.C., Santa Fe. Mayor Brennan, what does the experience of those cities teach us, not only in relation to Mike's question about skilled workers, but just about unemployment and the economy in general in those cities?
Well, thank you, Jennifer. And actually, I didn't know until quite recently, meaning within the last 6 months, that cities, other parts of the country actually had their own minimum wage. And I probably would have been talking about this a little bit more if I knew we had the authority to establish a minimum wage. But from what I know at this point, those communities have actually experienced more people moving to those communities to live there, because obviously if you have the opportunity to make $10 an hour and to enter that labor market, you're better off than staying 10, 15, 20 miles away when you might be making $7.50 or $8 an hour. The other thing that we struggle with in Portland, we have a relatively low unemployment rate. We have 46% of the people that live in Portland that are over 25 years of age have an undergraduate or graduate degree. The state average is 28%. The national average is 30%. The New England average is about 34, 35. We are well above state, national, New England average in terms of the people who live in Portland who have education, and we have an educated workforce. And that's one reason why we have a low unemployment rate. But we have a lot of underemployment. People that are working and making $30,000 and $35,000 and even $40,000 a year, despite the fact they have an undergraduate degree or graduate degree. And I think that when you look nationally at the growing income inequality, it speaks to the fact that we have huge segments of this state, as well as huge segments of the country, that haven't been able to keep up. And the minimum wage is not the only way, but it's a very good way to make sure that people don't continue to fall behind. But I would agree that ultimately education, skill development, those things are going to play a much larger role in helping people enter in the workforce and stay in the workforce.
Mike, thanks for your call. Peter Gore, you said something earlier that I want to revisit, and it's one of the big questions I have for this hour. You said in the past there have been times when the chamber has not opposed a raise in the minimum wage, but there have been times when you have. And maybe this is sort of a philosophical question for all of you throughout this hour, is this is a perennial debate. What's different this time, or is there anything different this time?
I don't think there's anything different this time. As a matter of fact, you know, my experience in dealing with the legislature is that minimum wage, I was surprised we're not debating that this session rather than the first session, because the second session is closer to the elections. And, you know, this issue, I think it would be easier to take more seriously if it was proposed not just before a significant midterm election. So there's certainly some of this is certainly politically motivated. People want to use this in the campaigns. Let's not shy away from that. If we do, we're not taking the issue seriously. It's absolutely the truth. But from a programmatic perspective, you know, it's easier for organizations like the State Chamber. We've not supported increasing the minimum wage, but at times we just haven't taken a position. When there's a full employment economy and people are already paying higher than minimum wage anyway. I know in Portland, for example, I spoke with Chris Hall, who's the executive director of the Greater Portland, or the president of the Greater Portland Chamber of Commerce, and his quick off-the-cuff poll of some of his businesses in the areas, they are paying more than minimum wage now. And that's not surprising given that it's Portland. But that's also Portland. I'll guarantee you there are other places or in other parts of the state that are not paying more than the minimum wage because they can't pay more than the minimum wage.
But Jennifer, I think the thing that's very different in the debate at this time is historically, and I spent 13 years in legislature going through this debate all the time with Peter, we're going to talk about this at the local level now. We're going to talk about this at the municipal level. And regardless of what the federal government does, regardless of what the state government does, I'm hoping that we're going to move this forward in Portland. And if we can do it in Portland, they can do it in Bangor, they can do it in Lewiston, they can do it in Dexter, Maine. So I think the debate has shifted and away from just totally relying either on the federal government or the state government to address this issue.
And Jennifer, I just might add that, you know, it is true. This is good policy and it's good politics. You know, recent polling shows that 70% of Americans support an increase in the minimum wage. 62% of Republicans support an increase in the minimum wage. You know, at the Maine Center for Economic Policy, our view on this is it shouldn't be a perennial debate. We should fix it and forget it. And what that means is
tie
we should set a level and then tie it to inflation so that we're not either using it as a political tool or we're sort of in a way that's not consistent with predictability for businesses, structuring it in a way that causes us to have the same arguments we've been having for 20 years.
Okay, yeah, I would just say one point on tying on indexing because autopilot doesn't necessarily work. But that indexing always only goes in one direction. It never goes back when the CPI falls.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. The phones are loaded up. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN Radio Listener Contributions and by Darling's Audi in Bangor, working to help Mainers rediscover the joy of driving with 10 new Audi models. DarlingsAudi.com.
Take out a dollar bill and have a look on the back and tell me, what's the deal with all those symbols?
Maybe King Tut, that might be his pyramid.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Conspiracy theories about your money next time on Marketplace. We'll have the numbers from Wall Street as well and the rest of the day's business news. It's from APM.
Join us for Marketplace this evening at 6:30 here on MPBN Radio. If you're a fan of MPBN Television's Doc Martin program and live near Ellsworth and are looking for something to do on Thursday evening, March 6th, MPBN has an invitation for you. Doc Martin viewers have been anxiously waiting for the premiere of Season 6, which MPBN Television will broadcast on Thursday and Saturday evenings, March 13th and 15th. However, if you'd like to see the first episode in Season 6 even earlier and mingle with other Doc Martin fans, MPBN will be showing it at the Grand Theater in Ellsworth, Thursday evening, March 6 at 7 o'clock. Doors will open at 6:15. Tickets are free. However, you must reserve your tickets in advance online at mpbn.net. Simply click on Events. Hope to see you there.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, the debate over the minimum wage. With me in the studio, Portland Mayor Mike Brennan, Garrett Martin with the Maine Center for Economic Progress, Steve Robinson with the Maine Heritage Policy Center, and Peter Gore with the Maine Chamber of Commerce. We invite you to join our conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. You can send us an email at talk@mpbn.net. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. Going back to the phones, we have Larry from Monroe. Hi, Larry. Go ahead.
Hi. I'd like to make a distinction between what we're talking about currently, raising the minimum wage versus a living wage. And the living wage, some people are defining it as $15 an hour. And the reason I think a living wage should be our real goal is because I think we fail as a society and an economy if we don't provide enough money to people who put in that fair day's work. They should be getting a fair wage for that.
Larry, let me ask you this. Do you believe the federal government should set a minimum wage at that living wage level?
I think every government should be setting it at that level because it's really a moral issue. It's about people who work hard and ought to be compensated adequately for that.
But Larry, why stop at a living wage? You know, if the government has the ability to make all people make more money, why don't we set the minimum wage at $25 an hour or $50 an hour?
Well, I think the important thing here is that even conservatives, I don't know about the Maine Heritage Policy Center, but a lot of other conservatives recognize that when you don't pay a living wage to people, the government winds up picking up the tab, and that means the taxpayers. You know, there's a lot of money that goes into fuel assistance, food benefits, Medicaid, things like that. The person in California who's leading an effort to raise the minimum wage to $12 an hour is a very conservative politician there. So even conservatives, I would think, would recognize that it's really costing the taxpayer money to not pay a living wage. And for that reason, those living wages would allow people to actually get out of poverty as opposed to being a little more comfortable but still in poverty.
Well, I think everyone sitting around this table right now agrees that we want people to make more money, and, you know, make well beyond a living wage. But the idea, the difference of agreement or difference of opinion is, how do we get there? Are we going to have the government centrally command that this is the wage and you can't pay less than this? Or are we going to have a growing economy that allows people to have social mobility and to advance their incomes? I think the Congressional Budget Office came out with a report last month that showed that raising the minimum wage through the federal government would have would result in fewer jobs. So there is a very real trade-off there. You increase the minimum wage, you have fewer jobs. It's a trade-off we need to deal honestly with.
Just to clarify that study. That study said that there could be zero jobs affected, or as many as a million. So it's not a guarantee that there will be jobs. And there's a lot of uncertainty, actually, how many jobs would be, quote, lost by increasing minimum wage.
But
I think we have to be careful about citing that study.
And I do think everyone acknowledges that there's a possibility of a trade-off. Peter, you wanted to jump in before it looked like.
Well, I don't want to get caught up in the issue of living wage, because it is a different issue from the minimum wage. But Garrett and I have some experience, having served on the Living Wage Study Commission that the legislature had a few years ago. And they're really – when you talk about a living wage, you can calculate a single living wage. But in reality, a living wage is different for every different part of the state, as Garrett will remember. And you're right. In some areas of the state, the living wage came out to $11 an hour. In some areas of the state, the living wage came out to $22-plus an hour. And, you know, having a starting salary at $22 an hour isn't economically realistic or viable for many small businesses in the state. It's not. And I get the issue of the living wage. I do. And I think that Garrett's folks did a great job putting together what would constitute a living wage. But it means very different things for very different portions of the state.
And I think when you conflate the idea of a living wage with minimum wage, you're drawing up this image of only minimum wage workers are single mothers or single fathers trying to raise a family. A lot of minimum wage workers are young people, teenagers, people who are working part-time jobs while they're going through college. They're not – minimum wage isn't supposed to be a living wage in every instance.
Well, isn't that one of the big problems, though, is that minimum wage was really designed to be for that entry-level job, maybe that job in high school. But the reality is today that many people working 40 hours a week and trying to support a family are indeed making minimum wage.
I think a key point here is, and this is certainly an issue that comes up every time we talk about this, but the reality is the president's proposal to increase the federal minimum wage, over 80% of the beneficiaries are over the age of 20. Unfortunately, we have an economy that is not working for an increasing number of working people. Those are not just teenagers who are working at the minimum. Those are people who check you out at the retail store. Those are people who work at the miniature golf course that you go to, and do maintenance on other places. I think that is a red herring in terms of this debate. I do think it is true that there are very differences in terms of the livable wage and what that means and why that's a standard that is merits consideration. But at a minimum, the minimum wage is really a labor standard. You know, we say to manufacturers, you can't pollute. There are rules of the game. There are rules of the game around how you treat your employees. And one of those rules should be that if an employee works their puts their labor on the table, they should be compensated fairly. The reality in most instances is that I, as an employee, don't have the power to change that imbalance. And so that's what's at stake here for working people. And again, is why I think so many working people, even people who don't have jobs, support increasing the minimum wage.
Larry, thanks so much for your call. Going to Steve in Orono. Hi, Steve. Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, I would say, raising the minimum wage, it would be federal and state. But also, half of the output, economic output, the state of Maine comes from, what's the Mayor Brennan?
Well, half the economic outcomes from Cumberland, York, and Sagadahoc County, 51%.
Right. $10 billion worth of construction in the next 10 years in Portland. So everybody sitting around the table maybe has great ideas, but there's only one person at the table that's getting it done. And there isn't a town in the state of Maine that wouldn't like to be doing what Portland's doing. So I think we should be taking notes from Mayor Brennan instead of second-guessing Mr. Brennan on what is good or what isn't good. Gap has made an announcement, and the only thing the minimum wage is a safe harbor for corporations and businesses to not pay people what they're worth. End of story. And that's what I love about Portland is it's also the best place for young people to live. What do we need in Maine? More young people. It's the best place for retirees to live. You know, Portland's getting it done. You name me another town in the state of Maine that's getting it done like Portland, and I'll thank you, Mr. Brennan.
Steve, wait, I need just to ask if you're related to Mayor Brennan in any way.
Well, I was going to say you can call in anytime.
I think Mayor Brennan definitely deserves kudos for winning election in the city of Portland, a city that's obviously doing well compared to other Maine cities and towns. But let's be honest, when there's construction happening, it's private sector individuals. It's free enterprise that's making that happen. It's not centrally commanded government that's giving us construction projects, development, and economic growth.
Well, one of the largest economic development projects that we've had in the city of Portland in the last 2 years has been the move of IMSCIP to the waterfront, and that puts us on the map internationally. But that's clearly a public-private partnership between that private business and public funding, both at the federal level and state level, that has allowed us to renovate the International Marine Ferry.
And so, Governor LePage has taken some excellent leadership in getting out.
Okay, this is about minimum wage, and I'm going to take another call in a second, but did you want to finish your thought, or are you all set?
No, I was just going to point out the fact that it's rare that you have a total a situation where there's a private development that doesn't involve some type of government support or some type of government intervention in that project.
Okay, going to Peter in North Berwick. Peter, go ahead.
I have a question for Peter Gore. If I understood you correctly, you stated that one of the reasons the chamber opposes the minimum wage is because it puts us at a competitive disadvantage. And I wonder, since our largest neighbor is Canada, and Canada has universal single-payer health care, we're at a competitive disadvantage with Canada because of that. And I wonder if the chamber would support universal single-payer based on the fact that we're at a competitive disadvantage with our largest neighbor.
I'm just going to stick with minimum wage stuff for today, okay?
Yeah, but the argument you use on many different things, you use the same argument, but you don't use it when it's reversed.
Well, okay, so flat out, no, we've not opposed single payer. I mean, we have opposed single payer.
What about the argument that you just used on minimum wage? Why don't you apply that when the reverse is true?
Because not everybody believes the way that you believe with regard to single payer and government-run health care. They just don't. And many of those are our members. The reality is this. The minimum wage and wage and hour costs in this state are part of a lexicon of things that come together and create the cost of doing business here. Part of that is the cost of our health care. Part of that is our wage. Part of that is our workers' compensation costs. And all of those things impact the ability of a business in the state to grow and to be as prosperous as the last caller pointed out, the city of Portland. City of Portland has a set of unique circumstances that allows it to be the kind of prosperous city it is. I grew up right across the river from it in South Portland. But not every place in this state has that ability. And they are, in fact, impacted by their cost of doing business and their ability to attract businesses to where they are. I mean, ask people in Somerset County. Ask people in Washington County. Is it tough for them to compete for jobs and opportunities? Absolutely it is. So by raising the cost of doing business in those places, does that make it even harder for those places to prosper and the people that live there prosper? Absolutely it does.
All right, Peter, thanks for your call. Going to Joe in Rockland. Hi, Joe.
Hi. Just a couple of comments. I think that the idea that a business would fail because they couldn't keep up with, you know, they couldn't afford the extra expense. Once if the consumer and the worker have more money, they'll spend it. So the demand goes up. So the business does more business, and the business can prosper. The other thing I would take issue with is the idea that labor is a commodity. I don't think labor is a commodity. Labor is what individuals and what people do with their strength, their bodies, their ambition, whatever, their skills, their education. But labor is never a commodity unless we're talking about a slave economy or something. So I found that offensive.
Well, then you'd be disagreeing with Karl Marx, who said that labor was very much a commodity.
Garrett, I'm going to let you jump in. I haven't heard from you in a while.
Well, you know, I think we're quickly heading into the classic areas of division, Jennifer. You know, my personal view on this and having looked at sort of the preponderance of evidence, quite frankly, is that while there are certainly concerns about business competitiveness, certainly concerns about the impacts of increasing the minimum wage on employment, in truth, those are largely theoretical. In practice, they're not borne out. The evidence does not support those arguments. If you look at states that increased the minimum wage from 1997 to 2007, they had lower levels of unemployment. We've gotten much better at understanding what are the differences between areas that increase the minimum wage and areas that don't. And again, they are not showing that there is a massive flight of employment opportunities. The other thing, though, that I think is important to bear in mind, and you led with it in the show, is what are the impacts of an increased minimum wage on issues like poverty, on reducing the need for government services elsewhere? I mean, there are some folks who I've heard argue that a minimum wage at such a low level effectively means that we are subsidizing business who choose to not pay their workers enough. And so I think that's an important consideration. The other piece is that it's good for business in the sense that many of the minimum wage workers are low-income – well, they are low-income workers who work in retail and other businesses. And many of those businesses actually are seeing the demand for their goods and services decline. Why is that? Because many of the people who consume those goods and services aren't making enough to be able to afford them. So we need to be thinking about how do we create an economy that results in a virtuous cycle in which people get paid more, we have more resources to invest in upgrading skills like education and workforce training, and that you know, a rising tide lifts all boats, versus a cut-and-run economy where we cut the knees out from underneath low-income workers, make it harder for them to get by, make it more essential that we as a society direct resources from a public perspective to the kinds of goods and services that they need rather than investing in the kinds of things that are going to build a stronger economy.
Okay, we're going to take another short break. When we return, more of your comments and questions. Please stay with us.
Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN radio listener contributions and by Maine Medical Center, whose research institute is now seeking volunteers for a study to find out if vitamin D can prevent diabetes. D2DStudy.org.
50 years ago, a heinous murder made headlines.
He attacked her 3 times, and then he sexually assaulted her too, when she was dying.
And there were reportedly dozens of witnesses who didn't intervene.
And there were people all over the world quoting the man at the top of the stairs who said, "I didn't want to get involved."
Revisiting the murder of Kitty Genovese today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Join us for All Things Considered this afternoon at 4 o'clock here on MPBN Radio. Each morning at 10, the Maine Capital Connection television channel provides daily coverage of the Maine State Legislature in Augusta. We cover House and Senate sessions, select committee hearings, and also offer occasional interviews and press conferences. Each evening, usually around 7, we offer a rebroadcast of the day's coverage. The Maine Capital Connection channel is available over the air and on many of Maine's cable companies' digital tiers. For information about the channel, including how to find it, what channel it might be on, and the current schedule, visit mpbn.net or call MPBN Audience Services at 800-884-1717. That number again, 800-884-1717.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, the minimum wage. In the studio with me, Peter Gore. He is with the Maine Chamber of Commerce. Mike Brennan is the mayor of Portland. Steve Robinson is with the Maine Heritage Policy Center. And Garrett Martin is with the Maine Center for Economic Progress. We invite you to join the conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Going to Loretta in Yarmouth. Hi, Loretta.
Hi. My comment is that most people would like to see a raise for basic wage earners, but nobody seems to be stipulating that any raise that happens should come out of present-day profits. And if this is not stipulated, then inflation results, and what that'll negate any benefit from the intended raise for the wage earner.
So I don't understand what you mean about a stipulation. Do you mean that only companies that make a certain profit would be bound to raising their minimum wage?
What I mean is that business may not raise its prices to afford the basic wage. It should come out of their present-day profits.
So in addition to setting the price for labor, we'd also set the price for all goods and prices. Essentially, you're advocating for communism?
But going into stores nowadays, I say I wish we did have price controls because they're going up daily.
I think Loretta's speaking to a concern that certainly is valid at a sort of macroeconomic level, to be wonky for a second, Jennifer, which is that if you raise the cost of labor, it may result in a rise in cost of goods and services. In truth, again, the evidence doesn't bear that out. And the reason for that is quite simple. Think about how you as a family would respond if the cost of something you purchase on a regular basis, like milk, goes up. Well, you adapt. Similarly, a business will adapt if the cost of one input like labor goes up. And so there are many ways in which they adapt. One is they become more efficient, and so they restructure the way they go about business. One is that potentially owners take fewer profits, and so that actually means that their workers get more. And certainly one is that they may choose to raise prices. But any price increase is certainly not going to outstrip the value of the minimum wage for the individuals and families who ultimately are the beneficiaries of that.
But I think that there's other ways that employers will, quote, adapt to a hike in the cost of labor. They can reduce the number of hours they're willing to let employees work, as we've seen with the Affordable Care Act. They can decrease their total how much employment they purchase altogether. They can, hire fewer employees. So there are many ways that employers react to a hike in the minimum wage, and not all of them are the good flowery kind, counting on their better nature to just take less profits.
Okay. Well, Loretta, thanks for your call. Go ahead, Mike.
No, I was just going to get back to a point that Garrett made a little bit earlier. This is actually good business. When you're paying people a higher minimum wage, the turnover rate goes down and productivity goes up. Businesses spend a considerable amount of time recruiting people and training people, particularly at entry-level jobs. And if you can take steps to mitigate those costs and reduce turnover and increase productivity, that's a win-win for the business as well as for the employee.
But if everyone's paying the same minimum wage, you don't have that effect on turnover. If that is true, that paying more is going to decrease turnover, then businesses would just pay more. When you force all businesses to pay more, that turnover effect is gone.
Well, again, studies that they've done in communities that have a higher minimum wage, these are some of the things that they've found. It's reduced turnover and it has increased productivity.
And I got to say, in doing some prep work for coming on here this morning, I read a couple of different articles, and I referenced off mic an article in The Atlantic that I found. And it's the most fascinating article I've read on minimum wage because this author took the time to gather up all the results of all these different studies, and guess what they found? That basically in this debate that's been going on, you can grab a study off the shelf that will point to just about anybody's argument in this discussion. It doesn't matter what it is, whether it's retention and recruitment, whether it's efficiencies. Someone else will point to the fact that it has no effect on turnover in this population, and efficiencies actually translate into fewer employees because guess what? The business doesn't need as many people as they have now that they're more efficient because they're paying higher wages. So I only point that out because this is a debate, and we started to get, as Garrett mentioned a few minutes ago, get into the yin and yang of this question. And everybody can pull out all kinds of studies about what one side does or the other. At the end of the day, politicians have to make the decision on whether they're going to go forward on this, and then they have to live with the results and what that means from the businesses.
Okay. You know, and we will make a point, Peter, of finding that Atlantic Magazine article and posting it on the MPBN Main Calling Facebook page. So
I'll
people are interested in reading it. Well, thanks. Thanks for doing that. We have several tweets, and here's one of them. Jennifer, please ask your guest to speak to the fact that the minimum wage was a dollar in 1956 and has gone up $6.75 in 58 years. Doesn't make sense. And I think I'm reading that right. It's in Twitterese. But that's what you had said earlier, Garrett, is even though that seems like a dramatic amount of money, it really hasn't kept pace with inflation.
Yeah. And that's referencing Maine's minimum wage, which came into effect at a dollar in 1958. Since that time, the value of Maine's minimum wage has peaked at around $9.60, I believe, if you were to sort of say, what's the value of that dollar today? Obviously, at $7.50, we're below what that value is, and you know that's the point. Prices go up over time, so too does the value of labor in that case.
And there's another tweet. Please ask your guest if I'll ask this one. Your guest has gall saying that companies didn't have the money. Perhaps if CEOs received a bit less, it might make a difference. And this is actually one of the things that's sort of hanging over the argument this time, isn't it, Peter, that some companies, and I'm sure many small business owners in Maine are saying, hey, not me. But in many instances, there are CEOs in the news making, you know, 1,000 times what their base employees are. And it sort of is affecting the argument this time around.
I think that argument's always been around, at least in my experience in the State House. But the reality is this. I have to look at it from the perspective of Maine businesses. And 90% of Maine businesses have 10 or fewer employees. So they're not CEOs making billions of dollars or millions of dollars. They're people who are trying to scrape around with a 1 and 1.5% profit at the end of the year. And we are a small business state. Our economy is driven by small businesses. While I hear that argument, and we do have large multinational corporations that operate in this state, the reality is our economy isn't based on that. Our economy is a small business economy. And, you know, at the end of the day, those small businesses have to find a way to adjust and pay for higher wage costs. And there's no way to know how that's going to translate.
All right. Going to Galen in Argyle. Hi, Galen. Go ahead.
Thanks for having me today. I just want to say I'm a retiree on a small pension, and I certainly feel how it lives to exist on poverty wages. However, I stand opposed to increasing the minimum wage. It has been my observation in my travels that areas where they pay really high wages also have a high cost of living. Now, I understand the cost of living has many factors that influence the cost of living, but whatever the wage is in that area is one of those factors. Every time you increase the wages, the cost of living simply goes up. And there's a lot of us who we can't afford that. We're on fixed incomes. Thank you very much for allowing me to call today.
Okay, thanks, Galen. I think this is related to the debate you all were having before.
Well, and Jennifer, I do think there's an important point to make here. We're talking about increasing wages at the bottom end of the income ladder. These are not folks who are going to somehow inflate the cost of living in the broader community in which they live. These are people who are struggling to make ends meet on a regular basis because they're not making enough in wages from the jobs that they're doing to do that. So the reason why the cost of living is higher in the communities I suspect that Galen's talking about is those are communities in which education levels are higher, in which the kinds of businesses that are located in those communities reflect the fact that the education levels and skill levels are higher and that there are other sort of advantages that those communities have that make them a more desirable place to live, work, and do business. I appreciate that concern, but as it relates to the minimum wage, it's grossly overstated. The fact at the end of the day is that we have people living in poverty who are working year-round full-time jobs, and that is a travesty when we consider what we expect out of an economy.
But I have to ask one question.
Okay, go ahead, Peter.
Will raising the minimum wage to $10.10 an hour lift those people out of poverty?
Yes.
Yes.
The Congressional Budget Office study that was cited earlier by Stephen clearly shows that increasing the minimum wage to $10.10 an hour will significantly lift a number of people out of poverty.
For those who keep their jobs.
Mayor Brennan, before
the job impacts are negligible at best.
Before we went to the last caller, you were going to jump in. Do you remember what you were going to?
I was just going to say, last week I went to a news conference with an organization called Buy Local. Several years ago, they had a half a dozen local businesses that were part of the Buy Local campaign. There are now over 450 businesses in the city of Portland that are part of that Buy Local campaign. They recognize the fact that they're small businesses, they're the entrepreneurial businesses of the future. They play a critical part of our economy. It's only fair that as we continue to support local businesses and local economies, that we want to support the employers with a fair wage. So we can spend a lot of time having discussions about ideology. We can have a lot of time discussion about philosophy. But if we want to have a local economy that's going to thrive and we want to have local business people that are going to thrive in the way that Peter was talking about, we have to have employers that feel that they're being treated fairly. And all this discussion about the minimum wage is simply how do we make sure that as we have businesses continue to grow, that we're treating employees fairly at the same time as well.
And just, Jennifer, back to Peter's question real quick, because I happen to have the Congressional Budget Office study in front of me. And what it indicates, Peter, is that if an increase of the federal minimum to $10.10 would lift almost a million people out of poverty.
At the cost of potentially 500,000 jobs.
And that's not negligible. For me,
24 million people would see their wages go up. And so on balance, even if we accept that the job losses would happen, which that is – suspect in this particular study. The reality is that 24 million people will see their wages go up and almost a million people will be lifted out of poverty.
But there is a trade-off here. There is a trade-off here, and those individuals who lose their jobs as a result of a minimum wage increase wind up on unemployment, and that drives up the unemployment tax for employers. The cost for small business owners of this is undeniable, and it's not a very good tool for fighting poverty.
Yeah, and the cost of more people.
I want to get to another call, everybody. Gentlemen, Dylan in Portland, go ahead.
Hi. Earlier when you were talking about the livable wage, one of the criticisms was that too much of the wage increase would go to college students or teenagers and stuff like that. What about a two-tiered unemployment system where people under, say, an age of 21 made a minimum wage closer to what we have now, and then over that where people are trying to establish a foothold, you know, in an adult life, can get closer to the 10-10 rate?
Dylan, wouldn't you be concerned that then that would incentivize businesses to hire teenagers instead of adults?
Well, in the industries that are paying closer to minimum wage, a lot of times they already are, just because they don't have to worry about, oh, I need the hours for family, for stuff like that. If they need to either fire somebody or reduce their wages, you know, a teenage worker is more malleable to stuff like that.
I think that there are some European countries that have experimented with the idea of having a two-tiered minimum wage. But again, just the fact that this proposal would be considered only underscores the discriminatory impact of a minimum wage policy on young workers. We're talking about creating a higher barrier to employment for these low-wage young workers.
I hear what you're saying too, but here's the other reality, and it has nothing to do with wage and hour costs. It really has to do with the administrative burden and complexity that many small businesses would face trying to configure a two-tiered minimum wage system. The reality is most businesses in this state don't have an HR person. It's the business owner or her husband or his wife who are taking care of the books. And, you know, businesses have enough of a struggle to understand the regulatory schematic under which they're supposed to operate in this state. And having a two-tiered system, whether directed from the feds or from the state, would just make it all the more burdensome.
All right. Well, one thing I want to ask before we say goodbye is where we are with this. I know that the Maine legislature is not taking this up this session. Mayor Brennan, where does your proposal, your idea go next? Is there a study group underway?
There is. I've had a number of people that expressed interest in being part of the discussion. We will have our first meeting this month, and I hope at some point before the end of the year that we'll have a proposal before the city council.
Okay, so before the end of the year, proposal before the city council, and hoping for a vote before the end of the year.
Yes, if not sooner.
Okay, and you don't have a number yet, right?
No.
You don't have a you have an idea?
Well, clearly, I mean, at the national level, the president has called for and others have called for looking at 10-10. So I think that is certainly within the ballpark. I don't know if we'll look at something about phasing it in or whether or not there is some number that would be more appropriate. We certainly first thing we want to do is look at what other cities across the country have done and what they've pegged their minimum wage at.
All right. Well, that's going to do it. Mike, Peter, Steve, Garrett, thank you all for joining us today. Mike Brennan, the mayor of Portland. Peter Gore with the Maine Chamber of Commerce. Steve Robinson with the Maine Heritage Policy Center. And Garrett Martin with the Maine Center for Economic Progress. Today's program was produced by Jonathan Smith. Our volunteer, Cindy Hahn, answered your calls. Nikki Shields ran the board. We had additional help from John Keimel and the MPBN web team. You can find past editions of Maine Calling as well as a link to our podcast by visiting mpbn.net/Maine Calling. You can also find our podcasts on iTunes. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.